Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Ray Hernandez. Before I bring him on, I want to remind you that you can always get new regular episodes on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. You're going to want to check us out on Rockfin. It's where you get all our premium content. You can get our regular shows, but also all the premium content from every amazing creator on Rockfin. We have our merch store up. Check that out. You can get yourself some shirts, stickers, bags, mugs. That link's in the description or fknstore.net. And finally, if you guys are reaching that stage in life, like me, where you're getting some of those gray hairs, check out C60 Purple Power. It may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. It's helped me with so much inflammation, energy, well-being. You can get C60 for your pets, so your pets can feel great too. Just click the link in the description, and you get 10% off your order, plus free shipping. Tonight, I want to welcome to the show Ray Hernandez. He is the director of the Consciousness and Contact Research Institute. He was previously one of the four co-founders of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation, FREE, a 501c3 academic research institute that recently completed a five-year comprehensive academic research study on UFO contact experiencers. He is one of the three co-editors of the historic 820-page book titled Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence, which was based on Free's five-year comprehensive academic research study on UFO-related contact experiencers. He has also published in several peer-reviewed academic journals, including the Journal of Consciousness Studies and the Journal of the Society for Scientific Exploration. He is also the co-editor of a three-volume book titled A Greater Reality, The New Paradigm of Consciousness, The Paranormal, and the Contact Modalities. Ray, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. Looking forward to our interview. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, definitely. I've been looking forward to it. You had an extraordinary presentation, like I told you, at this year's Laughlin UFO Mega Conference. It was last month, and it was about the new paradigm of non-local consciousness, the paranormal, and contact modalities, and it blew me away. And it's very encouraging to see some of these, you know, long-time nuts-and-bolts type UFO researchers come together with the fields of paranormal and consciousness studies. And I think that's really the key to understanding some of this phenomenon. Now, this is your first time on the show. For the audience that may not be familiar with you, could you give us a little bit more about your background and what ultimately led you to become the director of the CCRI?
Okay. A little bit about my background. I have an academic background. After graduating from Rutgers College in New Jersey, I then went on and got a master's degree at Cornell University. And after that, I went for a PhD at the University of California, Berkeley. And then after that, I went to law school and I became an attorney. And I was a professor for 6 years. And I taught city and regional planning. And now I am I'm a tax attorney. So it's the last thing you would expect from anyone in this arena. And before 2012, I had zero interest nor knowledge in any of these topics. And then in March 4th of 2012, my wife and I had a joint experience in our living room. And it's quite lengthy, but I'll just tell you very briefly what happened. Our 15-year-old Jack Russell Terrier became paralyzed. My wife was praying all night. The next morning, an energy being appeared to us, put me to sleep, made my wife disappear and our dog right in front of me. And then when I woke up, the dog was running around the entire living room, perfectly healed like a teenager. And my wife had an hour of missing time. Then after that, she began to pray at night. These huge UFOs would appear. And so 6 months after this initial experience, I then tried to call down she calls them angels. I call them modern angels. And this huge UFO appeared to myself, my daughter, and three adult friends. And then after that experience where that huge UFO appeared, this was literally less than 30 feet away from us, right on top of us, the size of a football stadium. And it was there for more than almost an hour. and very up close. And after that experience, then it began almost 4 years of nonstop paranormal experiences. And one of these paranormal experiences led to the formation of what we later called the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation. And that was an organization that was co-founded by the late Apollo 14 astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Harvard astrophysicist, Dr. Rudy Shield, Mary Rodwell, who is a researcher from Australia, and myself. And then that initial grouping of four, we invited almost 10 PhD professors and another 10 non-academics, very well-known people, people like Kathleen Martin, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, many other well-known names, Barbara Lamb, to work with us and the academics to develop the world's first ever 5-year comprehensive academic statistical research study of UFO contact experiencers. And I spoke, part of my lecture at Laughlin was about the data from that research study. And that research study from the very beginning to the very end lasted 5 years. And much of the data pretty much contradicts what is circulating in mainstream materialist ufology.
Yeah, and that's one of the first things that I'd actually love to talk about tonight is the data from that study. I'd like to get as deep as we can into it and kind of go through each of the sections of the study and kind of break down what's happening for these experiencers. So where should we start with that?
Yeah, let me talk a little bit about the methodology.
Sure.
First of all, no one has ever done this type of study before. They were very... few and short statistical academic research studies on UFO contact experiencers. The most well-known was a study that was done in 1992 by Dr. Kenneth Ring, who is a professor of psychology at the University of Connecticut. And he's one of the pioneers of near-death experience research. And what he did is he compared 85 people that had NDEs with 85 people that had abduction experiences. And he asked them, roughly around 200 questions, and 60 of those questions were how these people changed. How were they before and how are they now? And what he found out was that to these 60 questions, they both changed in exactly the same way, in the exact percentages. And that was for positive, positive changes. And I could go on later on in terms of our study because we used those questions. And outside of that, there were really almost no other studies, statistical studies. What you had was people that would do hypnotic regressions. They would ask leading questions. People that were very biased to begin with, like David Jacobs, who stated that he's never met an experiencer that ever had a positive experience. Well, our research study showed out of 4,200 people that 96% stated that their experiences were positive. So, you know, what does that tell you about David Jacob? You know, that he's full of shit, you know? And same thing with Bud Hopkins. Again, very similar positions to David Jacobs. So that's what you primarily had. You didn't have any statistical academic research on the phenomenon. And so what we did is we developed 9 months to find out how we're going about, you know, studying this phenomenon. And what we came up was 3 surveys. 2 of them were quantitative in nature. We asked over 600 questions, quantitative questions. And for those that don't know the terminology, that's like, okay, we give you a question, you got to pick from 1 to 5 or yes or no, or A, B, C, and D. For example, your experiences, were they highly positive, slightly positive, neutral, slightly negative, or highly negative? That's just an example. And then we asked 70 open-ended questions. That means we asked the question and the individual was supposed to write out the responses to the question. And so we administered that survey in multiple languages, 5 different languages. But what I'm gonna talk about now is the English language survey data. And we received over 4,250 responses, huge numbers, from individuals from over 100 countries. And then for the qualitative responses, the open-ended questions. We received responses from over 1,250 responses and over 10,000 pages of writings. So this was a huge amount of data. So that's the research methodology. And then the other question is, if you were to tell me, okay, Ray, what were the four major findings? Obviously, you saw the presentation. There were tons of different findings in there. But if you were to say, okay, Ray, just in a nutshell, give me the top four. And right. It would be as follows, okay? Number one, as you know, when I had my experiences, and I know that this was UFO related, first thing you do is you go to the internet, you know, and then you try to read as many books on UFOs that you can. And then I quickly found out that there was very, very little that actually talked about the experiences that I had, that my wife had, you know, a healing of our dog, an energy being in our living room, and then being able to call UFOs at will, you know, both my wife and I, and all of these paranormal experiences, you name it, we had it. And, you know, precognition, out of body experiences, seeing deceased people, you know, the whole gambit. And so, you know, there isn't anything on the internet that at least initially I came across that talked about that. However, the people that were part of our research committee, people like Barbara Lamb, Leo Sprinkle, Mary Rodwell, Kathleen Martin, they all knew about that, okay? So what we did is we asked a series of questions that were based upon a very, very broad nature of these experiences. And we had the assistance of the academics of how to phrase it. So the first question we want to find out were these experiences positive, negative, or neutral? And in data analysis, depending on how you ask a question, you'll get a different response, okay? So I could ask you, you know, 20 different questions and you'll give me different responses to how I phrase it. So that's what we did regarding that question. We asked over 25 different ways whether these experiences were positive, negative, and neutral, okay? For example, the most simplest question was a forced choice question. That means in order for you to continue with the survey, you had to answer this way or that way. That's it. If you didn't answer, you couldn't continue with the survey. And that was, if you had to make a forced decision whether your experiences were positive or negative, what would you choose? Well, 96% chose that it was positive, okay? But we also found out that initially in their experiences, 37% viewed their experiences as negative experiences, okay? But then we also analyzed how many times they had experiences. We're talking about contact experiences. In order to take our survey, there were two requirements. That's what I forgot to mention. First of all, you had to see a UFO. And secondly, you have had to have some type of contact with what is called the non-human intelligence. It could be telepathic contact. It could be physical contact with a being right in front of you. So that's in order to take our survey. So we asked that question, fixed choice, and it was 96% said yes. But then when we asked that question, how were your first initial contact experiences? Was it highly negative, slightly negative, neutral, slightly positive, highly positive? Well, we asked that same question, how would you describe your most recent experiences, okay? So we had two sets of different responses now. Initially, 37% their experiences were negative, okay? But then towards the end, it totally reversed, okay, to become positive. Why? Because the vast majority of these people had more than 20 experiences, okay? Over 40% of the people had more than 20 experiences. Between 10 and 20 was almost another 15%. So now we had 55% of the people had more than 10 experiences. And we did a bar graph that showed the more experiences you had, the more positive was your responses. And we also found out, interestingly enough, that only one third of the people stated that they had an abduction experience. Two thirds of the people never had an abduction, like in my case, okay? But yet ufology sees this field of contact as an abduction phenomenon, okay? So that's another misnomer that's associated with this field. Abduction does not equivocate, you know, contact experiences. It's actually, you know, the opposite. And what also we discovered for the people that had an abduction experiences, the people that only had one or two of these types of abduction experiences initially, those are the ones that answered the most negative, okay? And it's the people that continue to have their experiences. Now, out of those people that had an abduction experience, 70% now call themselves contactees, not abductees. Because over time, their contact experiences changed. Initially, it was a medical checkup. They were on the table, they were being inspected, you know, that sort of thing, or they were forced to be taken to another location. Later on, it was like, you know, I'm agreeing to this. I like it, you know? They're teaching me things. They're showing me things, you know? And we're talking not necessarily the short grays here. We're talking the type of beings that were categorized. The number one type of being was the energy being, okay? Number two type of being was the human-looking being. Number three type of being was the short grays. And the number four type of being was the ghosts and spirits. We also asked other categories, like for example, the tall grays came in number five. The mantid beings came in number six. The reptilians were number seven. And then there was another category. We asked numerous other types of categories. But then there was this other category called other, because we had 12 different choices. So a lot of people said, okay, didn't fit any of these 12 boxes. So they checked other. So it's 40%. So what we realized was that people were seeing literally hundreds of different types of quote unquote beings during their experiences. And then we also asked that question, you know, highly negative, slightly negative, neutral, slightly positive, highly positive to these different types of beings. And the vast majority of these beings were not negative. For example, the short grays was only 11% stated that it was negative. That's it, 11%. 60% said it was neutral, okay? For the human-looking beings, it was only like 4% said it was negative. Why? Because it didn't scare us. It looked like us, you know, like a human being. And the reptilian, the most ugliest creature that's out there, 22% only said that it was negative. And when we looked at the people that had the reptilian experiences, we looked at their answers. We found out was that they were scared of the being because of the physicality of it, not what the being did. It didn't rape their wife, eat their children, and Barack Obama's a reptilian, and all that bullshit that's on the internet. You know, that's garbage. You know,
right.
And what it was that they were scared of the physicality. If you could think of a 7 to 8 foot tall being with muscles like Arnold Schwarzenegger, with the body of a crocodile, with little cat eyes appearing a few feet from you, you know, you're going to be defecating in your pants when you see that, you know?
Right.
So anyway, I could go, we asked the question, if you could stop your experiences, would you, you know? Well, 92% said no, you know, keep it coming, baby, keep it coming. Don't stop it.
Right.
So that question of positive, negative, and neutral, we asked it in many different ways. And what we determined was that the vast majority of these people, over time, not initially, but over time, said that these experiences were highly positive. Number two category, okay? Well, I told you about Dr. Kenneth Ring, that study that he had done. He only used 85 people for both groups, the near-death experiencers and the abductees, okay? And what he concluded was that both groups totally changed their personality, psychological worldview towards the positive. And so we said, well, let's put it to the test with our survey. We asked those same exact questions. Well, guess what? The same numbers, the same statistics for all those questions, you know, within 5 percentage points of each other. And let me go over a couple of these things for your audience members.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. For the positive, okay? The overwhelming majority, we're talking about like in the 80s, 80 percentiles, of people became much more spiritual, okay? They became much more loving. They became less egotistical. They didn't fear death. They became more ecologically friendly. They became much more caring people, okay? They were much more consciously aware. They knew their purpose in life, you know, or a better understanding of the purpose in life. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. What you had was a total radical transformation of these individuals for someone that you would want your spouse to be, your best friend, your children, your siblings, your neighbors, the world to be. If the whole world transformed the way these experiences transformed, you would not have world wars. You would not have economic exploitation. You would not have our planet being totally destroyed like it is now. You know, it would be a totally different society. So the data reveals that the way these people are being transformed, it's being transformed to you how you would want the world to change. Okay. So that was, I mean, we're talking thousands of people now. Okay.
Yeah.
4,200 people. And again, we duplicated a study that this professor did back in 1992. Okay. With the same data. Now that was the second major finding. The third major finding was that these experiences involved multidimensional experiences, that these were multidimensional experiences, just like a near-death experience, just like an out-of-body experience, et cetera, et cetera. Why? Because 50% of the people that took our survey stated that they were brought to another reality, another multiverse. We're not talking now about an abduction here, okay? We're talking about, like in my case, I was driving my car in the middle of a traffic jam. I don't think I spoke about this at the conference, but then all of a sudden I was not in my car anymore, okay? I was in another reality and I was being shown things and I was being taught things and I was being downloaded with information. And it's the information of the contact modalities and its relationship with consciousness. That occurred in May of 2013. And then in August of 2013, I wrote an article on that, which we eventually published in the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation website. So it's the first time the term the contact modalities was ever mentioned. Why? Because I was shown all of this, the relationship of it. And I think I showed you my new book, that I've been working on now,
yeah,
now for about 4 years, and has four volumes. The first two volumes are theoretical in nature, and that's written mainly by medical doctors and PhD academics. And then volumes 3 and 4 are chapters written by experiencers of the contact modalities. And we're not talking about just someone that has seen a couple of UFOs, someone that's had a couple of out of body experiences, someone that's had a couple of NDEs. No, someone that's had all of the above. People that have had near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, have had UFO contact experiences. People have seen deceased people, et cetera, all in their lives. So so what we're trying to do is we're trying to show, to demonstrate that we need to be able to research all of these phenomena as one phenomenon instead of separate and distinct phenomena. Now, let's get back to these questions about the multidimensional aspects of these experiences, okay?
Yeah, sure.
As I said before, 50% of these people had experiences which were similar to me. You, all of a sudden, you're in a 3D reality and your consciousness gets taken into another location, okay? So again, these are people that have seen UFOs and people that have had some type of contact with non-human intelligence, okay? And then the other thing is we talked about people in our survey have had a whole array of paranormal experiences. Actually, the third major finding, which I skipped over, and I remember, apologize for my Alzheimer's, the third major finding is that these experiences, while they involve some aspects of physicalism. You know, people have physically saw a perceived UFO, okay? People have physically seen a being, okay? The vast majority of their experiences can be categorized as paranormal in nature, okay? Like in my case, I've called down 5 UFOs, 3 of them very up close, okay? After that, I just stopped because I don't need to. To me, there's nothing to be learned by calling down a UFO, okay? After you've had some of the experiences that I've had and other major experiencers, you know, there's no need to call down a UFO. So what? Big deal, you know? Here's a light in the sky, here's a little show, you know? In terms of actual beings that I saw, I only saw one being that time, the energy being in my living room, okay? Other times the communication were downloads where information was brought down. So, but the vast majority of the experiences were paranormal experiences. Let me give you an example. 80% of the people that took our survey had out-of-body experiences, okay? 80%, 8 out of 10, huge numbers, okay? Medical healings, 50% of the people that took our survey stated that either they or a member of their family had a medical healing, a miraculous medical healing by UFO intelligence, okay? 50%. As I said before, 50% were brought to another reality, okay? We referred in our survey like a matrix reality. So people can try to get a better perceptual understanding. You're not in your 3D reality anymore, okay? People have seen deceased people, okay? Ghosts or spirits, that was almost 2/3 of the people, okay? Huge numbers, 2/3. People that have seen orbs, 60% have seen orbs, okay? Near-death experiences, 37%. Had a near-death experience. Now, for each of these terms, we gave the definition in our survey of what is the definition of a near-death experience? What is the definition of an out-of-body experience? What is the definition of an orb? You know, that sort of thing. And we also stated, we're not talking about seeing an orb in a photo or a video. We're talking about in 3D, you know, that sort of thing. And I could go on and on with the paranormal experiences, but you name it, downloads. It was like close to 75% of the people had, you know, information downloads. People that received, for example, downloads of science and physics, that was almost 37%. All of a sudden, these mathematical equations pop in your head or this physics stuff pops in your head and you write it down and you're like, where in the hell did I get that? I never took high school physics. You show it to a friend that's taken high school physics or, you know, went to college for physics, you know, and they said, my goodness, where'd you get that? That's like another way of writing, you know, Schrodinger's equation or something like that, you know.
Right. Now, I have a question regarding the people's experiences in general, how you were saying that, you know, the more they took a look at these experiences and the more experiences they had, the more positive they became. I'm wondering, for the people involved in your study, how many had regressions done and were able to find out more about these experiences through hypnotic regression or some other modality like that?
Okay, that's a very important question, okay? The reason why is because we instructed the individuals to base your responses only upon conscious, explicit memories and not memories via hypnotic regression, not memories via lucid dreams, not channeling information, et cetera, because you could go to a channeler. The channeler could tell you, you know, 50,000 things. And all of a sudden, oh, the channeler told me blah, blah, blah about my past life. The channel told me about this. The channeler told me about that, right? Or you had a lucid dream or a series of lucid dreams for many, many years. And all of a sudden you had this experience with this reptilian, this experience with that, you know. What's the difference between what is a real lucid dream and what is a normal dream, you know? How do you differentiate, you know? So academically, as an academic, you know, those types of information is pretty much useless, okay? You would have to do a separate analysis of that. Hypnotic regression, right? I mean, this people can do hypnotic regressions that take a 2-hour Dolores Cannon class. There's very, very lengthy Dolores Cannon classes, you know, for over multiple days, multiple weeks. And you really learn the intricacies of doing this. But a lot of people, they take a little 2-hour class and all of a sudden they're doing hypnotic regressions of experiencers, okay? So, and then there's a lot of people, like I told you, David Jacobs, he's never met an experiencer that's had a positive experience, okay? So you go to David Jacobs, everything is going to be horrifying. You know, everything's going to be negative, evil, you know? So, you know, you get all these extremes, you know? So as we said, no hypnotic regression. There's very good people out there that do it. People like the late Dr. John Mack, people like Kathleen Martin, people like Mary Rodwell. These are all professionally trained people. Mary Rodwell is a trained therapist, okay, with a master's in therapy. Kathleen Martin was trained by the therapy that the police officers use, you know, to do hypnotic regression. So, and they're very lengthy, several months in length. I have a dear friend, Rebecca Fernandez. She's a PhD psychologist. She was trained, you know, over many, many months how to do these things, okay? But how could you differentiate that from a quack, you know? So it was only conscious, explicit memory people were told to answer their questions on.
Now, a large portion of your work is surrounded by, you know, the nature of consciousness and non-local consciousness. I'd like to talk a little bit about that because that is profoundly, I've come to understand, connected with everything. You know, our consciousness is connected out throughout the universe, really, to everything that I believe is in existence. So what have you found is some of the most profound connections with our consciousness and some of these this phenomena?
Oh, goodness. That's a topic that's we're just starting to begin to explore these things, you know, in terms of the UFO contact experiencer versus the experiencers of all the other contact modalities. We're really starting late for that because in near-death experience research, they've been doing that for many, many, many years at an academic level, at a medical doctors researching, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of cases and publishing them in peer-reviewed magazines. Outside our research study, no one has ever done this before, okay? You still got most of ufology focusing on flying saucers, you know? I mean, give me a freaking break, you know? And like this disclosure stuff, you know, to an experiencer, to me, it's like, you know, whoopee-doo, you know? Okay, flying saucers exist, you know?
Yep, I get it. You
know, I get it, you know, I get it, you know? You want me to call one down for you so you can fucking see one, you know? So. To me, it's for experiencers, it's not a big deal, but I understand the importance of it for society at large because they're awakening to this, and it's important for them to become, you know, aware of this, you know. But I think, you know, humanity is becoming aware of all of these topics of the contact modalities, and now I think it's become part of the mindset of society. And let me throw out a question for you and your audience members, okay? I always tell individuals that it's not a coincidence why three out of the four major contact modalities became publicly aware internationally within 5 years of each other, okay? Now, to me, the three major contact modalities are the topic of UAPs, the topic of near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and perceive ghosts and spirits, you know, the spirit world, whatever you might want to term it, you know, okay? So those four, to me, are the four major contact modalities. Now, let's take near-death experiences, okay? When did near-death experiences become popular around the world, or well-known, I should say, around the world? That was with the publication of Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life, which was published in 1975. And that's where he coined the term near-death experiences. That was an international New York Times bestseller, translated into numerous languages, and it circulated all around the world before the internet now, we're talking, okay, via books, okay? Now, the second major topic area is the topic of aliens and ETs and extraterrestrial visitors from other planets and stuff. When did those ideas begin to circulate widely around the world? I would argue it was with Star Trek, okay? Because before it was people that were just interested in UFOs and people that wrote, you know, books about, you know, ETs and aliens, and it was a tiny circulation of those types of books, right? But then all of a sudden, Star Trek came about again in the early 70s, okay? That was translated into multiple languages, began circulating all around the world. So now everyone knew about aliens, ETs, visitors from other planets, also interdimensional visitors, you know, from other dimensions.
Yes.
Star Trek eventually began speaking about all these things. Everything that we now understood today, Gene Roddenberry, you know, came up with that, you know, back in the early 70s. So here we had so far NDEs. We had the topic of UFOs, now out-of-body experiences. I would argue with Robert Monroe's publication of two major books that he published in the early 70s. And he made out-of-body experiences widely known throughout the world. His books were also translated into numerous languages and circulated all around the world. So not at the level of near-death experiences or obviously Star Trek, but still very widely known. For example, I went to get a haircut. This is about 2 months ago. And at the barbershop, I mentioned, do you know that the federal government very soon is going to be releasing a report about UFOs, you know, supposedly the disclosure report, right? Which turned out to be, you know, garbage. But basically, and so all of a sudden, all three barbers started yapping away, You know, oh, yesterday we were talking about that. Yes, we know about that. And I said, well, you know, you guys need to understand that I'm part of a group that's researching this. And this goes way beyond UFOs. I threw out the title of our first book, Beyond UFOs. And I talked about some of the other paranormal experiences, right? And so all of a sudden, the guy that's cutting my hair, he says, I understand that because I go out of my body, you know? And he explained an experience that he had. And he says, I also saw 2 months ago these huge orbs that appear in my living room, right? And then the other guy that was sweeping the floor, the other barber, he goes, that ain't shit, you know? He goes, I grew up in a poltergeist house. My house was haunted, you know? And then, and I've had lots of other experiences, you know, growing up. And I said, well, what was your most recent one? He said, about 7 months ago, he had this, what he called a shadow being, which is huge. He said it was like 8 feet tall, appeared right in front of him in his bed. And he was totally petrified, you know? And then he, you know, he goes a little bit about that. And so all three of these barbers, there were no other clients in the room. They all knew what UFOs were all about. They were widely read, okay? They knew what near-death experiences were about. They knew about ghosts and spirits. They knew about out-of-body experiences. So here you have the four major contact modalities, and three of these guys, they were all in their 20s, okay? They knew about it. Now, if you were to take me back to 1975 when Raymond Moody published, you know, about near-death experiences, no one knew what a near-death experience was. No one knew what an out-of-body experience was. No one knew what a UFO was, okay? Now, you mention to any guy in the street, they know what these things are, you know? Ghosts and spirits, people have been talking about that for thousands of years. So that's been widely circulated, okay? So my question now to you and the audience members, is that a coincidence, okay, that all of a sudden these things emerge within 5 years of each other? My argument would be no, it's not a coincidence that this is all being pre-planned to awaken humanity to the multidimensional nature of who we are and our role in our universe.
Okay, now we're getting to the big questions here. It also seems that there's this community of these beings that, you know, are aware of each other at least, and definitely aware of us, have an interest in us. It makes me wonder, is the human race some kind of grand experiment that all these beings are taking part in? I don't know. What do you think is part of this bigger picture here?
Okay. Well, I don't like to use the word being, because when you use that word being, you're automatically putting them in a terrestrial box.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Entities, maybe.
Entities, whatever you might call it. I prefer intelligence, you know, because if you have a near-death experience, you're interacting with, you know, a non-human intelligence.
Right.
Both in terms of deceased people, in terms of people associated as angels, as God, whatever, you know, different types of hierarchies of intelligences. So I prefer that term. Now, in terms of this, this has been baffled some major UFO researchers, I would say the top researchers, which are basically Alan Hynek. When he first started, he started debunking UFOs. Then he began to accept UFOs, but still as a materialist. Towards the very end of his life, he began to acknowledge that these might be consciousness-based experiences, okay? And that was just towards the very end of his life. Jacques Vallée, at about the same time that Alan Hynek, because that was his mentor, okay? He began to then talk about similar concepts. So I think both of them were evolving at the very same time. Jacques Vallée's position is that these are not, you know, extraterrestrial, that this is much more complex, that these are multidimensional consciousness-based experiences. And but yet, you know, 99.9% of ufology has no idea what Vallée is talking about, you know? So he's pretty much isolated himself from ufology, and ufology has isolated from him. You know, there are exceptions. He appears at conferences here and there. He writes an occasional book about UFOs because that's been his main interest. However, Vallée did not extend his initial hypotheses to the entire contact modalities, even though he fully documented that these individuals are having primarily paranormal type of experiences and that these are consciousness-based, okay? And also, he spoke about the multiverse, multidimensional type of experiences, except he didn't take it to where I'm taking it, is to the entire broad spectrum of the contact modalities. So that's the difference between our work and Vallée. We've sort of, you know, stepped a little bit more forward ahead of them in that arena, but very similar concepts, very similar principles. So in terms of these being extraterrestrial beings, that's the dilemma we have here, because they're appearing to humanity in physical form, but yet both Alan Hynek and Jacques Vallée, these are the top two researchers by far, okay? Not just on the UFO aspect, but the experiencer aspect of it. They came to the conclusion that these are dualistic type of forces. These are both psychic and physical. Now, in terms of coming up with explanations for it, at this point, these are all hypotheses, okay? But I could jab a little bit into that in terms of what I...
Oh, yeah.
Well, what I suspect is going on. But again, we really don't understand it because we haven't done the necessary research. That's where the research of this new organization is taking place, the consciousness and contact research.
Yeah, that's what we need, man. That's what we need.
That's where we're going to go, into that arena. And again, it's getting back into these very deep, complex questions. Let me give you an illustration, because this is a topic of multiple days that you could interview me. We can never finish, okay? But let me just give you a couple of my own personal illustrations, okay? When I was out there and I was calling down that that initial UAP, my very first one, right? Initially, I heard, my wife is here. So, thank you. Initially, I heard a voice of my daughter, okay? And the voice said, next time I see a UFO, to call her, okay? Now, she had never said that, okay? And what I realized afterwards, that whatever this intelligence is, it was able to upload my memory banks of my daughter and then recompute it into a sentence and download it back, so I'm hearing her, okay? In the living room, when I was watching that energy being in front of me, whatever that intelligence was, totally controlled my consciousness. I didn't care that my wife disappeared. I didn't care of the importance that I was watching of that energy being. I looked at it, I squinted my eyes at it, and I said, bullshit. This is what you got me up for this crap? I'm going back to sleep. Now, that is not something that a normal person would say, you know, someone that has all these advanced degrees like I have, you know, certainly someone that has been raised to think rationally, you know. So what I realized later, for 6 months, I was like, why did I act that way? Why did I act that way? I couldn't figure it out. But then after a series of experiences, I realized that this intelligence is able to go into your consciousness and totally control it, your memory thoughts, okay? Could put whatever thoughts in there. Same thing in terms of visually what you're seeing. It's able to project holographically what you're seeing. For example, the initial object that I was watching, okay, was not a solid object that we were watching. It was a series of light configurations that were hundreds of oblong streets of lights that formed the whole shell of it, the skeleton of this huge object. And in sight was all this white swirly plasma energy, okay? Then my friend comes, all right? Because my daughter is next to me, because I eventually called her because I heard a voice. She wants to see it. So she's there watching it. My friend comes and with his wife and their 17-year-old daughter. And they began to question what they were watching. I said, what is that, Ray? I said, you know what it is. No, it can't be. It can't be, you know? So then they began to come up with explanations for it. And so in my head, I don't know why I did it. That's another thing, okay? All of a sudden, I'm communicating with them like it's natural, like I've done it a million times, right? I tell them, I can cuss here, that I'm not going to get banned for cussing. Okay.
Oh, you can cuss this up a storm.
Okay, this is exactly what I thought in my head. I said, you better come up with some better bullshit than this, man, because my friends don't believe you, okay? Instantaneously, and this is a thought that I had in my head, I was looking at them, and I said that, you know, instantaneously, what we were watching was totally replaced. And they were replaced by hundreds of very large stars that were not in the sky. They were inside that object that I was telling you before, okay? And they were all blinking like this, on and off, on and off, on and off, like that. And then by sections, some of these stars would power up like the size of the moon and then power down. Then in another area, power up slowly and then power down. then in another area like that, okay? Then my friends stopped because they knew this was not, you know, man-made, okay? So how did Ray Hernandez, with his thought, tell him, look, you better come up with some better shit than this because this doesn't work. And instantaneously, they totally deleted what we were watching and they put something new up there, okay?
Right.
These are like holographic projections that they interact with our consciousness, okay? All of us had cell phones except my 10-year-old daughter, okay? Myself, the two adults, and the 17-year-old. The 17-year-old had her cell phone in her hand, okay? Why didn't anyone take a photo? This thing was like right on top of us.
Right, yeah.
Right on top of us. What I realized, okay, well, first of all, after we go inside, after my friends leave, they just leave like after 10 minutes. And to me, I didn't even question them leaving. You know, now it's like, what are you, fucking crazy, man? You're leaving now in the middle of the biggest spectacle you're ever going to see in your life, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't question, oh, don't worry about that document that you want me to do, you know? I'll give it to you tomorrow, you know? It was like normal stuff that they had to leave, you know?
Yeah.
The guy that lives under the house, he came to the window, turned on the lights. He and his either his daughter or his wife, because they're both about the same height. And they saw us. Now, I know this guy, Pablo Tacachel, you know? And I knew his wife. All he had to do was come outside. Why do I have five people, including my neighbor and his daughter, with their mouths hanging wide open, looking right on top of my roof? Like, you know, normal thing to do.
Yeah.
Or for me to knock on his door. Pablo, get the hell out. Look what the hell's on top of your roof. That never took place. He then turned the lights off later on. That's not normal, okay?
Yeah.
Then the way they got us to leave, my friends left, okay? Then it's just my daughter and I. And we were just watching this UFO, right? Then all of a sudden, I felt like I was being attacked by hundreds of mosquitoes. And I was slapping my legs, slapping my arms. And after like, you know, 30 seconds, I couldn't take anymore. And so I grabbed my daughter and I said, we got to go inside. So once we go inside, I tell my wife what had happened, right? And so my daughter goes to me, Daddy, there were no mosquitoes outside. So when she said that, it was like the hypnotist snapped his finger. And I was like, all of a sudden, I woke up from the trance. I was in a trance. Okay.
Yeah.
It was like a very, very thin trance where the best way to describe it is that there's like a wall of reality. Okay. Like you couldn't cross over that wall. Okay. For you to be able to understand and act accordingly. Okay. You're like behind that wall. So you're fully aware of it, but you can't think straight, okay? After she said that, it's like I woke up out of the trance and I immediately ran downstairs. I got my professional camera, professional video camera. I ran outside. This was like less than 20 seconds. Boom, nothing was there. So that is an illustration of the consciousness aspect of this phenomenon. That my interpretation is that this is not necessarily, you know, a little ET coming from a physical planet, Venus or something like that. We're dealing with an intelligence that's able to, you know, blink out, you know, to people are being brought to the futures, people being brought to the past. Yeah, Jacques Vallée said they're able to manipulate space-time. Jacques Vallée himself said that, okay? And so our research also validated that these experiences are manipulating space-time. So by that definition, that's multidimensional in nature. So as Jacques Vallée said, if they're multidimensional, they could be from the future, they could be the past, they could be, you know, who knows what, okay? So that's my position, that these, like the Jacques Vallée perspective. The other thing is, are we really being visited by hundreds of different types of beings that are coming from hundreds of different types of planets, okay? I don't think so. I don't think that's the reasonable, logical explanation. What I think is that whatever this intelligence is, like Vallée says, it's interacting with us and appearing like holographic projections to be able to change us, okay? To interact with us. Because humanity, I think, has reached the state of self-annihilation. And what we need to do is we need to become more ecologically friendly towards our planet. They've been warning about that topic, you know, for many, many, many years. And we need to become much more loving and much more spiritual. And that is not just with near-death experiences, even though that's the main message in near-death experiences. You need to become more loving, more spiritual. What we were able to show is that over 80% of these people were given that information to become more loving, much more spiritual, both with UFO contactees as well. And people change accordingly. So that's the message that we need to shape up, or we're going to ship out. And so that's what's happening with us, I think.
Yeah, and it would make sense when you step back and look at all these contact experiences, and like you said, the messages and some of the things that are occurring during these experiences. It would seem like these entities, or this great entity, whatever this is kind of steering humanity to evolve us, to kind of push us along in the right direction. It's very interesting to look at it that way.
The problem is that you have to look at who established the paradigm for the phenomenon, okay? There's three main people who established the paradigm, okay? We're talking about contact experiences. First of all, contact experiences were never accepted to begin with by materialist ufology, okay? Even Alan Hynek initially did not want to touch, you know, the contactee aspect of it for many, many years, until eventually he was forced to. Major Kehoe, same thing. You know, he purposely did not accept those reports because he thought that it would bias the UFO materialist, the flying saucer, you know, research aspect of it. And then the people that did set the firm footing on that, and we're talking about before John Mack became involved, and that was Whitley Strieber, Bud Hopkins, and David Jacobs. Dr. John Mack was there for a short period of time, and his research totally was very divergent from Hopkins and Jacobs. Now, if you look at Whitley Strieber, when he first wrote the book Communion, it was a horrific book. It was like a horror book.
Oh yeah, I was scared of that book as a kid.
Okay, but now you look at Whitley Strieber now, he's Mr. Love and Light, okay? Yeah. He's talking to his deceased wife, interactions, he's seen deceased people, you know, and on several interviews, and he also told me personally that he prays every night, thank you for these beings coming into his life, because it totally changed him into a benevolent spiritual person, okay? He's now a totally spiritual person, not a believer, but a knower, okay?
Yeah.
And so Whitley Strieber is an example of the person that took our survey. Here's someone that initially was very scared of these experiences, okay? But then later on had this tremendous transition over many years of experiences. And now, like most of our experiencers, they are Mr. and Mrs. Love and Light, okay? So that's what ufology just does not understand, you know, that transformation. And so, but yet the paradigm with the people that were invited to these conferences were either Whitley Strieber, Travis Walton, okay? And Travis had one experience, that's it.
Yeah.
One. He's not the poster boy for contact, you know? He's just only had one experience, you know, that we know of publicly, okay? And then, so the people that were invited were Whitley Strieber, Travis Walton, Bud Hopkins, and David Jacobs, that's it. So they established a paradigm. Okay, they appeared on all the radio shows, coast to coast, you name the radio show, for many, many years. So that became the paradigm. When you had an experience, who did you go to? You read the books of David Jacobs, you read the books of Bud Hopkins, and you became even more scared.
Right.
Okay, you read Communion, you were totally petrified. You know, these beings came across again, and all of a sudden, you were trembling in your pants, you know, versus if you would have read books, for example, by Leo Sprinkle. For example, Mary Rodwell, Barbara Lamb, these other people. And later on, Kathleen Martin. Because Kathleen Martin, this woman is a highly spiritual person. ETs are very, very positive to her. Okay, but she first started as an abduction researcher. The ETs healed Kathleen Martin. Okay, she had a debilitating disease. She was out there talking to them, pleading with them, please help me, I'm in so much pain. Boom. 2 days later, she was totally healed. That disease never came back. The disease she had for 20 years, okay? So that's Kathleen Martin, a very major player. I could talk about it because she's now public with it. She recently became open and talking about these things. So the paradigm is now slowly changing, okay? Because the truth has come out. And then with our book, that's data. You know, that's ammunition, okay? That's not BS hypnotic regression of David Jacobs saying, oh, I never met anyone that's had a positive experience, okay?
Right.
Now, this whole aspect of David Jacobs is being destroyed by our data, pretty much. So, but now what we want to do with our organization is take it to that next level, which is what we were just discussing a second ago. What is the relationship, okay, between consciousness and the contact modalities? Yeah. Now, a couple of things that are interrelated with UFO contact. And for example, let's just talk about NDEs, okay? Three out of the four major beings are the type of entities that are seen in UFO contact. We're talking about human-looking being, the ghosts and the spirits, and the energy beings, okay? Telepathic communication, how does it take place? Mind to mind, okay? With both. Whenever you get an alien ET flapping his lips, you know? It's all mind to mind telepathic. The other topic is both of these experiences, what they have in common is out-of-body experiences, okay? Other commonality, people get brought to other realities, both the UFO contactees and the near-death experiences, okay? People are being shown visions of the past and the future with both groups. We already talked about how these people change. Both groups change exactly the same way, okay? So I can go on and on and on. Both groups involve a manipulation of space-time, okay? Both for the near-death experiences, the out-of-body experiences, and for the UFO contact experiences, the manipulation of space-time. Unequivocally, we demonstrated that, okay? But yet, materialist ufology does not want to acknowledge, for example, Richard Dolan, he called our work woo-woo science. Well, is he a scientist? Yet in our group, we have 20 PhD scientists.
Right, yeah.
Okay? Real fucking scientists. But yet he's calling what we're doing woo-woo science. The guy is a fucking historian. He's never done any research. He's not a researcher either. He's never researched the contact experience, but yet he wrote a book titled The Alien Agenda. How the fuck does he know what is the alien agenda if he never researched experiencers? Okay?
Right about that.
I'm sorry to talk like that, but that's the God's honest truth, okay? But that's the bullshit that you have in this field. It's filled with misinformation and disinformation, okay? The reason why our scientists are focusing on consciousness is because these individuals view the nature of reality from a post-materialist scientific perspective. And that is that our reality is an illusion, okay? That consciousness is primary. And we're talking about theoretical physicists, astrophysicists, neuroscientists, okay? Psychiatrists, psychologists, numerous fields, quantum biologists, numerous scientists, they see their reality very, very differently, okay? So don't call it woo-woo science. It's like quantum physics. Albert Einstein called it spooky action at a distance, okay? Because he called it woo-woo science because he didn't understand it, okay? But now quantum physics is the established, you know, paradigm of advanced physics, not both an Einsteinian, you know, of physics as well, you know, both of them together, but it's not just only Einstein's physics. One was physics of the larger reality, the other was the physics of the very, very tiny reality, you know, the atom, the atomic level.
Yeah.
So it's what you just don't understand, you know. It's a new paradigm, what we're trying to express. And ufology, just by focusing on flying saucers, videos and pictures. Let me ask you a question, okay? That mindset of focusing on pictures and videos, what the fuck has it given us over the last 80 years?
Oh, just a bunch of misinformation, like you were just saying, and a bunch of confused people, really.
A bunch of confused people and nothing. What you had was all these conspiracy theories now, like, oh, I was beamed up to Mars, okay? And when I was up there, I killed 10,000 reptilians. And then I was beamed back, but the 20 years I was up there, I was now regressed to when I first was taken, okay? You got people like Corey Good that did that three times. You know, the guy should be 60 years older than everybody else. You know, he was beamed up for 20 years, came back, beamed up for another 20 years, came back, beamed up for another 20 years. That's the bullshit that people are talking about, okay?
Yeah. You have
Captain Randy Kramer, okay? He went up there and he killed 10,000 reptilians. But yet Ray Hernandez gives a presentation at Contact in the Desert. I had 20 people that show up. But yet Corey Good and David Wilcox fill up an entire auditorium of 4,000 people.
Oh, yeah.
And
that stuff sells.
Paid, they paid an extra $75 for the, to see them, you know, extra. So that's what we've got now. Okay, we got Ancient Aliens. People have a huge line to see Ancient Aliens, and here I am, I'm talking about real fucking aliens. Okay, nobody wants to see what we're talking about. So that's why I say that this whole field, okay, is filled with misinformation and disinformation, and it's keeping, you know, humanity in a state of disillusion.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I've been talking about this for forever now, the disinformation that's in this community, and it's gotten off the charts. It's really bad. Now, for the last few minutes they have, let's talk a little bit about not only the disinformation, but what's going on with disclosure right now from our, you know, mainstream sources and the disinformation that's coming out of that. I mean, what do you think is behind all this? You kind of hinted that we are in a state where that we may be being led or evolved in a certain way, but they're also kind of painting it as a little bit of a threat in the mainstream media. And there's a lot of misinformation surrounding it. So let's close on talking about that.
Okay. First of all, I know some of the people involved in the mainstream disclosure movement here. And some of these people are fully aware of the complexities of this phenomenon, the consciousness-based aspect of the phenomenon. But to maintain their credibility, they don't talk about that. They sort of allude to it here and there, you know, that these might be consciousness-based, multidimensional, but they're focusing on terrestrial type of objects, okay? Because first of all, as our discussion here is very complex to be able to some begin to grasp a hold of the multiverse, okay? Even though the vast majority of theoretical physicists believe in a multiverse, not believe, that's their position. There exists a multiverse, okay?
Right.
And in terms of the what they know about the phenomenon, they know just as much as we do, which is zippo, nothing. Okay, this is extremely complex. No one in the federal government knows really what the hell is going on here. Okay, because if they're not even publicly talking about the more complex nature of it, how are they going to know about the complexities of it? We have Dr. John Alexander, who's been involved in military intelligence for many, many years. He's retired now for many, many, many years. But he still knows a lot of these people. He's associated with Bob Bigelow. He knows all the people that were part of the Tic Tac group, you know, with Elizondo and all of those, Mellon and all of those folks, okay?
Yeah.
And he basically told me that that a lot of these people are still have these blinders on when it comes to seeing, you know, the phenomenon from a strictly materialist perspective, but they're slowly changing. Now, Alexander is just like my position, okay? These are multidimensional, that consciousness is primary, that we need to see it as a totality, as one phenomenon, et cetera, et cetera. So the disclosure, I think, they have a lot of juicy cases in terms of them from materialist files, okay? But very few people have access to these things. And it's never going to come out publicly from what we know as disclosure, because even Jimmy Carter, when he became president, he and several other presidents publicly wanted this information. They were told you don't have access to it. Okay. So I think disclosure for your audience members' purposes has been taking place for many, many years. In our book, we had 4,200 people that talked about disclosure, okay, about their own personal experience. All you have to do is go to the internet and read about these phenomena, listen to these phenomena. And from my perspective, it's not just about UFOs. It's about all of the paranormal contact modalities. Because if you talk to these people that have had UFO contact experiences, the vast majority of them are having primarily paranormal experiences, okay? You name the major experience, and I know almost all of them, okay? They're all having major paranormal experiences, okay? So it's not just about UFOs, just like the title of our book says. It's the title of our book is our first book, Beyond UFOs, okay? If people want to get information about this book, our research study, and then the second book that we're going to be coming out, A Greater Reality, just send me an email and I will send you free chapters and free information. The email is info@experiencer.org.
Info@experiencer.org. Very good. Yeah, Ms. Hernandez, thank you so much for that information. That we just kind of barely scratched the surface of some of this stuff. I'd love to have you back on and go even deeper sometime.
No, most definitely. Most definitely. We could talk about our second book next time.
Yeah.
Our book is A Greater Reality. It's going to be published on October 1st. So maybe you could bring me back so we could talk about that new book at that time.
That would be great. And thank you so much. And before you head out, you gave out your email. For people that are interested in finding out more about you and the work that you're doing, is there any other ways that they can find out?
Well, we're having a website that's being developed now. It's going to be open to the public on October 1st, the day that we publish our book. And
great.
The website is going to be experiencer.org. experiencer.org. But the best way is request over half of our book. This book, as you can see, is 820 pages, okay? I will give you more than half of this book for free. I won't charge you a penny. I'll send it to you via email, the chapters of our book, so you can read about the study. And I'll send you information about our new book. So it's info@experiencer.org. That's our email, info@experiencer.org.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Email him, get that book. It's fantastic information. And like I said, I'd love to have you back on, and we'll do that after the second book comes out. So I'm looking forward to that.
Perfectly. Thank you.
All right. Well, until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll be back again tomorrow.